Hi there, Jonathan here. The following talk is offered freely to ensure that no one is ever denied access to these practices and to these teachings. If you feel inspired to make a donation to support this offering, you can go to my website where you can also sign up for a monthly newsletter designed to support you in your practice. That's at www.jonathanfaust.com. Thank you and enjoy. Torah says, love your neighbor as yourself. The Buddha says, there is no self. Maybe we're off the hook. The second, deep inside you are 10,000 flowers. Each flower blossoms 10,000 times. Each blossom has 10,000 petals. You might want to see a specialist. And the third, be aware of your body. Be aware of your perceptions. Keep in mind that not every physical sensation is a symptom of a terminal illness. And the last one kind of ties into this talk, which is about finding freedom in the body. Just to honor Martin Luther King today, he said that the ultimate measure of a person is not where they stand in moments of comfort and convenience, but where they stand at times of challenge and controversy. And certainly there are times when it's challenging to be in your body. And I'd like to talk about the body and its play in freedom. And so here we have this body, and you know, really, what is it good for other than making your head portable? Four things I'd like to touch on, and on how the body is a tool. First, is a tool for accessing present moment awareness. The second, it's a tool for accessing healing, for healing undigested experiences in your life. Third, it's a very powerful tool for accessing your intuition. And fourth, it's a very powerful tool for accessing reality and clear seeing. So I ran across this as I was doing a little research, a little bit about your body in 2017. This is what is going to happen in your body in 2017, more or less. Your body is going to produce 91 gallons of saliva, 18 to 25 trillion cells will die by programmed death. Your body will produce 135 gallons of urine. Your hair will grow about 6 inches. Your heart will beat about 35 million times. Your fingernails will grow about 1 to 1.5 inches. Your body will shed 8 pounds of skin cells. And blood will travel 4.38 million miles through your body. Pretty wild, isn't it? Like, what are these things? And of course, as your body ages, you get to watch how it changes over time, how hair stops growing where you want it and starts growing where you don't want it. You know, we have these, when you look at your teeth, these teeth are designed for like tearing and gnashing. You know, there's this animal body that we're inhabiting. And yet, inside this animal body, the Buddha made some pretty radical statements. He said, I declare that it is within this body that you can achieve the understanding of the creation of the cosmos and the cessation of the cosmos. Like everything you seek to know about reality is available by paying attention. the Buddha's instructions for contemplation of the body are remarkably simple. I'll read here a translation. Breathing in long, she discerns, I am breathing in long. Or breathing out long, she discerns, I am breathing out long. Or breathing in short, she discerns, I am breathing in short. Or breathing out short, she discerns, I am breathing out short. She trains herself, I will breathe in, sensitive to the entire body. She trains herself, I will breathe out, sensitive to the entire body. She trains herself, I will breathe in, calming body fabrications. She trains herself, I will breathe out, calming bodily fabrication. If it is pursued and well developed, it is said that great benefit comes from this. And the Buddha goes on to say, on whatever occasion the monk or the practitioner remains focused in the body in and of itself, ardent, alert, and mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world, on that occasion, her mindfulness is steady and without lapse. When mindfulness is steady without lapse, then mindfulness is a factor for awakening and it becomes aroused. She develops it, and for her, it goes to the culmination of development. So you notice the natural flow of the breath. No control of the breath. When the breath is long, you notice it's long. When it's short, you notice it's short. When you breathe in, you breathe in with an intention to calm the body. When you breathe out, an intention to calm the body. When the mind becomes distressed, physical pain, emotional turmoil, mental agitation, you train the body in and of itself, ardent and alert, putting away greed and fear in reference to the world. That is to say, rather than focusing on what's out there, become ever more focused on what's actually happening here. Let's do a little practice, just a little moment of Zen here. So as you close your eyes, just take note of the natural flow of the breath. Is your breath right now short? Is it long? As you breathe in, can you include an intention to calm the body? As you breathe out, can you feel this intention to calm the body? And just take a moment to reflect on this line. When you remain focused on the body in and of itself, ardent, alert, and mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reverence to the world, on that occasion, your mindfulness is steady and without lapse. And just take a moment to sense the simplicity and the impact of this teaching. Remaining focused on the body in and of itself, ardent, alert, and mindful, putting aside greed and distress in reference to the world. Then you are mindful, steady, and without lapse. So as you're ready, you might deepen the breath. And if you like, you can open your eyes, or if you prefer, you can remain with your eyes closed. when you can sustain attention on the body, even if just for a little while, you begin a very dramatic shift from being identified with the cognitive, with the thinking mind, and being fully present in the here and now, in the experiential. And so this becomes an essential practice, not just with the breath, but anything you're doing in the body. When you breathe, be aware of the breath. When you walk, be aware of walking. When you wash the dishes, be aware of washing the dishes. Which reminds me of the story, which you may be familiar with, of the Zen master with his young students. Pretty strict guy. When they're doing their studies, he's standing over them and he says, "When you read, read." That's his main teaching. When you read, read. When they're having their meals, he stands over them and says, "When you eat, eat. When you eat, eat. Be one-pointed." Late at night, the students are hungry and they decide to sneak into the kitchen and they find their Zen master eating a bowl of rice and reading the newspaper. And they know they have him busted, so they don't have to say anything, and they just stand around him, waiting. And he looks up and he says, "When you eat and read, eat and read." So remembering the breath is what the practice is all about. Remembering the body. I not too long ago got an Apple Watch, and it has a Breathe app, which is pretty cool. And I can't tell you how many times it reminds me to breathe, and I am not breathing. So the body is instant access to the here and now. As I've shared, when Eckhart Tolle was talking about the power of now, he was giving a lecture, and someone said, "I hear what you're saying, it makes a lot of sense, but how do you do it?" And Eckhart said, "Can you feel your hand?" And the guy said, "Well, yeah." And Eckhart said, "Congratulations." It really is that simple. When you are awake to the senses, you've made a dramatic shift from thinking to being. And just in that moment of presence, you're severing your identification with the thinking mind, which cultivates a sense of presence and freedom of just for a microsecond. So the body is also a storehouse of information. As a lot of massage therapists say, your issues are in your tissues. You know, your life experience is encoded in the body. And sometimes when you begin to really slow down and pay attention to the body, you will notice that undigested memories come to the surface. It's not uncommon at all. When you cultivate non-judging awareness, you're noticing everywhere you judge or have been judged. And so this becomes an important and integral part of a meditation practice, is how do you work with difficulty when it arises? Not that long ago, I was having a conversation with someone who felt she was just utterly caught in endless anxiety and endless worry. And when she came to me, she said, "I am so sick of talking about this." So I said, "Well, maybe we can move from the story to where it lives on the inside." So I asked her to think, you know, when you think about everything that's making you so anxious, can you actually locate that? Can you locate that inside? We tend to hold our emotions in the midline, the core of the body. The jaw, the throat, the heart, the lungs, the belly, and the lower abdomen. And so she began to kind of sense inside, and she noticed pretty quickly something in the pit of her stomach that felt very tight and very hot. And normally it's the last thing we want to feel. But with a mindfulness practice where we're investigating, without judgment, she was able to stay with it. And she saw that associated with that feeling in the pit of her stomach was just a terror of failure. And that was kind of connected to this deep sense of being a disappointment to her father, which was just a very kind of a deep searing wound for her. And she began to explore what it was like just to feel that, to feel how old that was and what it was like to kind of carry that inside for so long. And then she began to explore what would happen if she was to offer that feeling inside, a sense of empathy or a sense of compassion. And over time, she could begin to feel it soften. She could feel that pit begin to kind of broaden and loosen up a little bit. And it gave her a real sense of relief. And so we speak a lot of the acronym of RAIN, R-A-I-N, to recognize what is there, to ask if you can allow it or accept it. Sometimes you can't, which is okay. But if you can, to investigate. And that primary investigation is, how does that story live on the inside? How intimately can you make contact with it? And when you've made contact with it, then can you meet that with a sense of empathy, a sense of compassion, and then just track. Quite often, that practice of empathy and compassion is a kind of lubrication that allows you to kind of sense it, to feel it, ultimately to begin to release it in some way. So the body becomes not only a storehouse of all of your life memories, of your traumas and your hurts, as well as your memories of bliss and ecstasy, but it also is encoded with messages for you to tune into. I have read this before a number of times, but I always find this helpful. Because so much of the time, we have a sense of unease in our lives. And yet we don't know what it's about. Like there's something under the surface. And we're getting those messages through the body. But they're vague, they're unformed, we don't quite know what they are. So I'd like to read some pieces of this this next piece. It's rather long, but there's no author that's known, but it's really about kind of this intelligent voice of your body. So if you'd like, you can close your eyes. And you might just sense as you listen that this is some reflection of the voice of intelligence inside. I am the pain in your head, the knot in your stomach, the unspoken grief in your smile. I am your shortness of breath, your fragile low back, the cramp in your neck, the despair in your sigh. I am the pressure on your heart, the pain down your arm, your bloated abdomen, your constant hunger. I am where you hurt, the fear that persists, your sadness of dreams unfulfilled. I am your symptoms, and the causes of your concern, the signs of imbalance, your condition of dis-ease. You usually want me to go away immediately, to disappear, to slink back into obscurity. You mostly are irritated or frightened, and many times shocked by my arrival. And so you medicate me in order to eradicate me. Ignoring me, not exploring me, is your preferred response. But I ask you, I am a messenger with good news, as disturbing as I can be at times. I am wanting to guide you back to those tender places in yourself, the place where you can hold yourself with compassion and honesty. If you look beyond my appearance, you may find that I am a voice from your soul, calling to you from places deep within that seek your alignment. I may ask you to alter your diet, get more sleep, exercise regularly, breathe more consciously. I might encourage you to see a vaster reality and worry less about the day-to-day fluctuations of life. I may ask you to explore the bonds and the wounds of your relationships. I may remind you to be more generous and expansive, or to attend to protecting your heart from insult. I might have you laugh more, spend more time in nature, eat when you are hungry and less when pain or bored, or spend time every day, if only for a few minutes, being still. I am your friend, not your enemy. I am simply tugging at your sleeve, too long immune to gentle nudges. My charge is to energize you to listen to me with the sensitive ear and heart of a mother attending to her precious baby. And again, deepening the breath. And if you like, you can let your eyes open. So there's a deep inherent wisdom and intelligence in the body. And listening to it can bring you into a very deep sense of balance. Listening to it can not only help you to kind of unwind old tensions, but that listening can draw you into a very deep sense of intuitive understanding. And this brings up a very interesting element, that not only can you find healing in the body if you can listen to that intelligence, but there's a very profound form of intuition that you can cultivate in the body. It's called kinesthetic intuition, or the felt sense, or the gut feel. I can't remember if I shared this story recently, but I was just reflecting on this sense of kinesthetic intuition, and it's something I've been fascinated about, you know, this, like, what is this crossroad of non-judging awareness and intuition? How can we cultivate both? And the story goes way back to when I was in the Peace Corps back in Niger. I was teaching in a university on the other side of the river, of the Niger River. And at the end of a day, I was kind of heading out to my motorcycle, and one of my colleagues drove by in the car, and I called out to him because I really needed to talk to him. But he didn't hear me, and he kept driving. And so I thought, oh, I missed Tom. And then suddenly my guts clenched up. And I thought something terrible has happened. And so I just kind of listened to that clench. And this little voice said, you'll see him in a few minutes. Something terrible has happened on the bridge. I just kind of noticed that. Okay. So I got on my motorcycle and I headed out to the John F. Kennedy Bridge. And the traffic was backed up, but because I was on my motorcycle, I'd go along the side, and there are all kinds of camel trains bringing in firewood. And if you get down real low, you can go under the firewood. And I saw Tom, but then I was really interested as to what was going on, and I went up toward the height of the bridge, and there was this young guy, maybe 14 or 15, who looked like he was asleep, but a long trail of blood. And it was absolute chaos. The police were screaming at the truck drivers, and the truck drivers were screaming at the police, and people were honking their horns because they were held up. And I just saw this, you know, this body. And for whatever reason, I just closed my eyes, and I just thought, no one's praying for this young man. And so I just closed my eyes, and I suddenly felt this fluttering, like chaotic presence. And I just said, you can't go back. It's okay, you have to go. And then it was the strangest feeling, but there was this presence very, very close, and this voice said, merci, and then disappeared. It was such a freaky experience, and who knows if I made that up, but it came directly from my body. And our body is communicating all the time, the felt sense of the body. If you get on an elevator and you go up a few floors and the elevator doors open and someone gets on and they're kind of creepy, what does that feel like inside? You know, you clench up. You know, if after when we're done and you head out for cookies and you see your best friend from high school who you haven't seen in years, you'll probably feel an expanse. And so the body's communicating all the time. And we can learn how to really tune in to the body. Sometimes in listening to kinesthetic intuition, to kind of the felt sense, to the gut feel, it can be complex. You know, you might be invited to go somewhere. I remember one time I was invited to go on an adventure. And immediately I thought, I feel myself tightening up. But I realized that wasn't the final signal for my body. It was just telling me to kind of be careful. And I realized, so it didn't mean I shouldn't go. It just meant I should really make sure that I'm taking care of myself while I'm on this adventure. And what I realized, so if I really take care, oh yeah, I really want to go. So here's a little Zen pop quiz for you. If you like, you can close your eyes. A little reflection. If you could ask your body the following question: what would be the optimal time to go to bed tonight? And what impression do you get? If you were to ask your body, what would be a kind and optimal routine before you go to bed? What would that might be? What might that be like? And if you like, you can open your eyes. There are a number of ways we process information. Some of us are very visual. Some of us are more auditory. And some of us are more kinesthetic. And if you've explored at all with neuro-linguistic programming, it's quite fascinating. They kind of have it nailed. People are really visual. They tend to talk a lot faster and they use their hands a lot because they want you to see the picture they have in their head. So they really want to get it across to you. If you tie someone's hands behind their back, it's really visual. They can't talk. And people are really, really visual. They can be really irritating because they know what it's supposed to look like. If it doesn't look like that, they can be really, really hard on you. Know anyone like that? People, they actually use language like, God, imagine this. No, picture this. Because they're thinking visually. People are more auditory. You can usually tell an auditory person because their voice is usually a little bit more moderate. And they'll actually use words, if you really pay attention, they'll use words like you know, that sounds good. Or nah, it doesn't ring a bell. Because they're processing primarily through the auditory channel. And people are really kinesthetic. You can tell people are really kinesthetic because they're a little... a little slower. Because it's more about trying to get across a feeling. So if you're a visual person with someone who's kinesthetic, it can be a nightmare. I tend to be very visual when I get excited. And I remember way, way back living in the ashram, I was upset about something, that the way they were cooking food in the kitchen, because I was macropsychotic at that time. And I asked to meet with the head of the kitchen. And I said, so I'm really, really wondering if you might, you know, change the way you prepare the rice, because I'm not really sure it's really the best way to do it, because this study over here says this is the best way to prepare the rice. And he's like, it doesn't feel really good for you to come in here and talk to me like this. I'm like, yeah, I understand, but this is the way we need to really do it, because it's so much better. You know, that every study says it should be done this way. It was a total failure. And then I walked out of the kitchen. I thought, oh, he's kinesthetic. I'm visual. So I asked for another meeting. So we sat down, and I said, you know, I was just feeling that how important it is that everyone feels really taken care of in this community. It's like, I really get that. Yeah, so I don't know how you feel about this, but I just feel that if we cook the brown rice this way, I just think a lot of people would really feel good. It's like, yeah, I hear you. That's really good. So once you learn someone's modality, you can really get in there and manipulate them. So just so you know. But of all the forms of intuition, the slowest to form but the most reliable is kinesthetic intuition, that felt sense, when you kind of know it in your bones. And that you can develop that by really paying attention. When you have a decision to make, to really ask yourself, okay, so here's option A, option B. If I did option A, what would that feel like? And let that feeling form. It can sometimes be a tremendously informative practice. So the body is such a tool for tuning into intuition, to kind of get your own felt sense. And there are all kinds of really wonderful ways to train that. But the Buddha also pointed at how the body is a tool for seeing clearly into reality. When the Buddha set off on his desire, on his quest, it's really your quest, which is to find out what is real, what is undeniably real. And as the Buddha often said, don't believe a word of what I'm telling you, but find out for yourself. There are three important elements, he said. If you look very, very carefully at the moment-to-moment arising of your experience, you may begin to see three characteristics of reality. And the first characteristic is called anicca, or impermanence. And that's the recognition that everything changes. Everything that's born out of causes and conditions will change. The second characteristic is referred to as dukkha, which is the unsatisfactoriness, the unsteadiness, the suffering that occurs when you forget the first one. When something is changing and you don't want it to, or something isn't changing and you want it to the degree that you're not cooperating with reality, you're going to feel dissatisfaction, stress, and suffering. The third characteristic is referred to as anatta, or loosely translated as not self. And that is a recognition that who you are is comprised of two basic qualities. There's an element of who you are that is the product of causes and conditions. Your body is going to change and fall away. Your beliefs, your emotions, your mental states, they're going to change and fall away. And yet there is something unchanging that you can begin to recognize. So this becomes very, very informative. And it's something that I try to bring into my practice, particularly when I'm doing an intensive practice. In a few weeks, I'll be at the Forest Refuge for a 7-day sit. And I really try to embrace this, to recognize impermanence, to explore my relationship to what's changing, and to see the impersonality of it all. So I thought we might do a little reflection on these three characteristics. If you like, you can close your eyes. And sometimes I find this practice can be very particularly enhanced on sound. So you might just tune your attention to the sound vibrations around you. And take a few moments first to reflect on the characteristic of impermanence. Notice what changes. Reflecting on the second characteristic of reality, that when your mind fixates or resists what is here, to the degree you resist, there will be some sense of dissatisfaction. And conversely, to the degree that you can fully let it be, there is no suffering. Reflecting on this quality of anatta, notice how the sounds are impersonal. They are outside you, simply passing through. And can you let them be? Notice what is changing. Notice how, if you can let it be, you are free. And sense who you are as this vast, luminous awareness, effortlessly aware. And we'll close with one of my favorite readings about the body by Joyce Sutphin called Living in the Body. Body is something you need in order to stay on this planet, and you only get one. And no matter which one you get, it will not be satisfactory. It will not be beautiful enough. It will not be fast enough. It will not keep on for days at a time, but will pull you down into a sleepy swamp and demand apples and coffee and chocolate cake. Body is a thing you have to carry from one day into the next. Always the same eyebrows over the same eyes and the same skin when you look at the mirror, and the same creaky knee when you get up from the floor, and the same wrist under the watch band. The changes you can make are small and costly. Better to leave it as it is. Body is a thing you have to leave eventually. You know that because you've seen others do it. Others who were once like you, living inside their pile of bones and flesh, smiling at you, loving you, leaning in the doorway, talking to you for hours, and then one day they are gone. No forwarding address. Deepening the breath. And when you're ready, you can let your eyes open. Thanks for your kind attention. Sorry to end on a death note, but, you know, this is a reality-based practice, so there you go.